And welcome to the Everyday Board Game Podcast with Daniel.
And Daniel.
Happy anniversary, Daniel.
Happy anniversary, Daniel.
We have been doing this for a year. Can you believe that?
Yeah, it's shocking. So officially, as we're recording, it's the 22nd. Our anniversary is actually the 27th, which means the audio and video versions of these on YouTube and the audio podcast platforms will release after our anniversary.
This is exactly the point. So if you're watching this live, awesome for you. We're coming right to it. If you're going to listen to this later on, know that we've been doing this for a year. And to think that all this was just a preventative measure from going mad from lockdown. That was really our goal with this.
It really was. The whole thing is because we were part of a gaming group that we would meet every Wednesday night. We played through some campaign games, play some games off our shelf of shame. And then you and me had been talking about starting a podcast, and then lockdown happened, and both of us were kind of, yeah, we need to do something. This way we don't go mad.
Yeah, exactly. And then, so this was a plenty good excuse. And after, how many episodes we've had?
Yes, I actually have that statistic right here in front of me. 34 top eight debates.
34 top eight debates. Wow. So you and I have argued back and forth 34, coming on 35 times as of today. For the podcast, of course. We've argued plenty of times before that.
All the time. What are you talking about here?
That's true. Every, as you said, we had game nights every Wednesday.
And
resulting in a violent argument of some kind.
Yeah. Someone usually saying, damn it, Daniel, or damn it, Danny, or some variation of that.
Yeah, some variation, and it was either one of us, either me telling dad jokes or you hating on dad jokes. Either way, someone was upset. This has been good fun, and we hope that it's been. I imagine we're not the only podcast that was created because of this pandemic, but I feel like we are the best one that was created because of the pandemic.
Well, we're different. That's the thing. We're doing things a little bit different. So like when we do our discussion topic, which this is the Chits and Giggle stuff, we kind of try to do different feels and different things. We don't want to just talk about our top eight favorite games. Mind you, that's what we're doing today, but we're doing that with a little bit of a twist. And it's more of our top eight favorite games that we've played in the years since we started this podcast.
Yeah. Yeah. And this was a hard list because I actually had to go back the entire, you and I both track our games.
Yeah.
You can see here, we use an app. And every time, I went through an entire year's worth of data, which if the viewers didn't know this already, this entire year so far, since January 1st, I've been trying to play at least one board game a day.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes many more than that. But that's a lot to trudge through.
Oh, yeah. I had to go through a lot as well. Luckily, I went through it and I looked at it and I'm like, okay, yeah, there's that game. Yep, that's going to go on my list. Yeah, that's going to go on my list. And so my top three games are my most played games within that year. So that's saying something.
Yeah, it is. So I didn't calculate how many times I played in the past year. I did just go through the list and I made a list of probably about 25 games of ones that I thought were notable and then whittled it down to the eight.
That's pretty much what I did. I looked at all my games, my most played. I only considered some of the most played just because those are the ones I remembered the most of playing and gave me a lot of memories on it. But mostly it was, okay, there was this, but I only played this once, so let's eliminate this. I've only played this once, so let's eliminate this. Now, mind you, there are a few games that I only played once last year, but they were that memorable I had to bring them onto this list.
Yeah, which makes a lot of sense. So then, of course, like all of our other discussion topics, we decided, what better than to ask the viewers as well? Do we want to talk about what we've been playing lately?
We didn't
even discuss this before. I'm sure I could talk about games, but what have you been playing lately?
I do have four games to talk about, and the reason why I do want to talk about one is because something very important happened, but we'll get to that in a little bit. So one of the first games we played is you and me got together on Friday, and we played a game on Board Game Arena, and you were wanted to show me something, and that was Boomerang Australia. And actually, that wasn't a bad game. I really enjoyed it. It's a good. Now, I wouldn't really consider it a roll and write or a flip and write. It's more of a draft and write because you're drafting cards between the players. And I love the different scoring possibilities that you can get in it. And honestly, I wouldn't mind trying to physical copy this. I actually really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I saw it online. It's, I think, about $20, and it's for like an older version, slightly older version. And I think they just started theming it to Australia. I know they're going to do New York.
Yeah, there's other countries that I've seen. Mm-hmm. There's even a family edition from what I saw on Board Game Arena.
Oh, that's cool. I didn't realize.
Yeah, that. There was like a little ad on one of the banners.
Cool. That's worth looking into. Yeah, it was super fun. I liked that one a lot, honestly. That was on my short list of games I was going to talk about this year. That was really genuinely surprised by.
Yeah, no, that one was surprising. I actually really enjoyed it. And it didn't take long. It was like 10, 15 minutes.
Yeah.
I think the longest part is because both of us were like, oh, man, which card do I take? And because there's so many possibilities for points, it's like, do I take this because it matches this symbol? Well, I don't want to take this because this symbol I can't use anymore.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
And then you're trying to take like a high number and a low number at the end because you want to get your boomerang points. And then you're trying to like, oh, but he's got, well, let's see where he's going with his numbers here. No, I really enjoyed it.
Yeah. I feel like I have a pretty solid strategy, but you weren't far behind me. We were within like 9 points of each other at the end.
Yeah.
It was really close.
Granted, I enjoyed it.
I think a total of 6 boomerang points total throughout the game.
I think that was just mainly because I made a mistake, and you're going to make mistakes on your first play. I wasn't paying attention to everything. I concentrated on one thing, and maybe I shouldn't have concentrated on that one thing. So I was trying to get the Australia, so it was like their states, their counties, or whatever they're called.
Oh, yeah.
Getting the 3 points on those rather than trying to make sure I got enough pictures or boomerangs or something like that to match the symbols.
Cool. That makes sense. Yeah, I feel like that game you could do a really good job of like kind of trying it out, playing the field, trying certain things, not others, you know. I feel like you have a lot of minimum number of plays for full experience in that one.
Oh, yeah.
All right, cool. My newest one that I wanted to talk about that I played is Azul. Now, I've played Azul for many, many a time before, but this one was extra special because a couple weeks ago, my mom took a trip to Arizona to visit my brother. And she came back and she was like, well, I have something to tell you. And I promised your brother I wouldn't say anything, but I'm going to tell you anyway. And I got really serious, like, what happened? Like, I played games with him. And then I felt so betrayed that I had to guilt her into playing a game. But really what I did is I just asked her, like, oh, what games did you play? And she said, she was like, oh, I played a couple of these that were okay, but I really like Azul. And she had never played that before. My brother showed her. Yes, I brought it over last night for her to play. She destroyed us. Oh my God. She was like, oh, can you boring. Oh, this is only 7 points. Like, it's like, this is your first turn. How are you getting 7 points? Like, what in the world? It made no sense. She was just absolutely destroyed us. I think it was, I had like 74 or something like that ended with. Mm-hmm. My wife had like almost 80. My son had 70 and she had 91. Like, it wasn't even close. It was just so obscene to watch. She did a really good job, and that's now one of our family favorites that we're going to be playing.
That's cool. I mean, she's the one that really got you into trick taking games, or if I'm not mistaken, is that correct?
Yeah, long before I was into board games, she taught me Pepper. So now I got her back by teaching her all these cool games. Like, she likes Carcassonne, she likes Ticket to Ride, she likes Azul now, and like Lost Cities, she actually is quite a fan of that one.
Okay. Well, that's pretty cool. That's really neat. Let's just explain to the viewers that your mom, it's safe for her to travel. So, because she's in the healthcare field, she was one of the first ones to be vaccinated.
Yeah, exactly. I do want to clarify that she is vaccinated, and my brother, who she went to visit, is also vaccinated. And then they didn't go out. They just, I think, went for like a hike or two.
Yeah. So we're not condoning, we're not condemning either, but it's better safe than sorry. Your mom has gone out of her way to be safe, so let's clarify to our listeners, this way people don't get upset.
Right. Yeah, it's good to add that clarification. Thank you for pointing that out. It's true. Yeah.
So my second game I played And I'm glad I got it off the shelf. It wasn't on the shelf of shame or opportunity, whichever way you want to call it. But for me, it's been on my shelf for a bit. And that is Tapestry. I did get to play it again. And I really got to say, I really do enjoy this game. I know a lot of people have issues with it. I did play with the errata rules for some of the civilizations that came with the expansion. Didn't play with the expansion, though. Still need to. But I really had a good time with it. Really enjoyed it. I still haven't cracked 200 points. So I don't know how these people are saying, yeah, for my first game, I got like 212 points. And I was like, what? This is probably one of my better games I've ever played. And I still only cracked 190. So yeah. So I don't get how they're cracking 200.
Didn't I break 200?
I don't know. I have to check my stats, but I'm not sure. My highest score, I think, is 198. And I think I ended up with 193 at the end of that game. I still say it's more of an engine builder than an actual civilization game, but I like the fact that you can play this in under an hour and a half rather than most civilization games that will take you 4 hours or so. So Tapestry was the other game we played, had a really good time with it. I do want to get that expansion tried out.
Okay, I just remembered what my score was. 298.
298, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, it was. I don't know what I did, but I broke it. That was a good game day. I like that one a lot. Oh, and our good friend Nate joined us. Top score was 213. Good job, man. Yeah. So my next game that I've been playing lately, I just got because Barnes & Noble started selling the small Looney Labs pyramid games, and I didn't realize that they had started selling it until I went by there the other day. And I saw there was one specific one that I already had a copy of, technically, but I wanted to talk about it because I absolutely adore this game. It's one of the best abstract strategy games I feel is around. It's called Martian Chess. And it's a very simple concept. You have 2 4x4 boards, and in between the boards, there's a black line that's called the valley. All you can do is you have to move these pieces similar to chess pieces, but by jumping them over the valley into your opponent's side and capturing a piece on your opponent's side. That's the only way you can get points. The pieces you capture are worth 1, 2, or 3 points, depending on their size. And that's also how good they can move. I love this game. It is so brilliant how it works. I'm not a fan of chess, personally, but I love abstract strategy games, and this is up there in the upper echelon of really just amazing games. If you're unsure about the Pyramid Arcade, because it's pretty expensive. It's like $70 or something. It has a lot of really great components. But I get it. If you're not interested in that, that's fine. But if you like any kind of abstract strategies, it's worth a go to try Martian Chess. In fact, I actually played one with our good friend Nate, who's on the chat here. And he'll let you know what he thinks, I'm sure, in the chat later on. So what else have you been playing, Daniel?
So the third game on my list is another Stonemaier. As you can tell behind me, I'm a Stonemaier fan. I got the boards behind me to prove it. And I played Wingspan. It's still such an amazing game for just my group, my family, my wife. Couldn't think of the term for some reason, but she loves this game. It's a really good engine builder.
You would be mad if she heard that.
Yeah, good thing she's not home right now. It's a really good engine builder that's just... phenomenal. I love the art. I love the production. It's very well produced and maintained by Stonemaier Games. I think it's a decent engine, or I had a decent engine going on. However, it died on me halfway through just because the way my engine was working, I needed to have fish in my supply. And just at points in times, fish weren't being rolled. And with the new Oceania expansion, you could get nectar, but you can't use nectar to activate player or cards. So I could never use my nectar to activate my fish activation that I need because the pelican need to happen. And then my little penguin needed cards to come up that had fish food and they weren't coming up. So it died on me halfway through the game, unfortunately, but still had a blast with it. Really looking forward to more expansions that are coming out. We have had 2 expansions, so they've covered 3 of the 7 continents so far. So we got 4 more probably coming up, and maybe a little bit other small packages coming up. But yeah, can't wait.
Very cool. Awesome. Next one I've been playing is Pandemic Legacy Season Zero. Now, I know we've talked about this before, and I've talked about it plenty of times, but what made this especially different is this is Season Zero, and we've been playing every Sunday for the past like while with people who are vaccinated, thank goodness. And what makes it even more interesting is that we've been losing the last four games in a row. It's been absolutely killer. It's been one of the most complicated ones. And this last game that we played for Pandemic Legacy Season Zero, it was the first month in July. And we won it by the last turn. And it was technically down to a coin flip. I won't spoiler like what we had to do. But we had to make a choice between one or option A and option B, and one of them was the winning factor, one of them was the lose factor. And so the one that we chose, we were lucky, we won. My friend Jim was kind of disappointed because he hates not having that control. I'm like, he was like, well, that takes the choice out of it if you're flipping a coin. I'm like, no, the choice was whether we try for it. That's what our choice was. It's like, if we didn't try for it, we would have just lost. Which is fine. Yes, still very wrong about games. We won adequately. to clarify what that means, in Pandemic Legacy Season Zero, they have kind of like a scoring system. Or not really a scoring system, but like...
Yeah.
You can complete all of the objectives except for one, and you still technically win, and it's called adequate. So if there's two objectives and you get only one of them, you're adequate. If you get both of them, you succeed. And any less, if you fail two or more, then you fail. So that's kind of how they rank it. And so we did lose one, but right at the very end, it was a 50-50 chance. And we even checked the next cards and we would have lost.
Man, that's crazy. It was
the wire. And we decided and we got the right one and we won. So now we're going into August next month. And now we're super excited about it. So, oh man, I don't know if it... It seems incredibly brutal, though. I still say Season 1 is probably my favorite of the three, although I did like Season 2 quite a bit. But this is definitely the hardest of them, and it feels so, so difficult comparatively. So, yeah, it's worth a shot. That is Pandemic Legacy Season 0.
Alrighty, and moving on to my final game that I played this weekend, or this past week, and it's a bit bittersweet for me.
Yeah.
Because we played Gloomhaven Jaws of the Lion and it ended.
Wait, hold on.
I thought there was a lot more, but I was mistaken. There's only 25 scenarios in the game. And roughly, you'll... 50. No, it's only 25, if I remember correctly.
Oh.
Because if you look at the stickers, there's only 25 stickers that you put on the board. Roughly, there's a couple extras because of certain choices you're making in the game, and a couple of them didn't come up because, from my understanding, well, from what we can infer from other ones, was we didn't get those city cards that came up that allowed you to open it up a little bit more. It's a bit bittersweet to know that we're done because we had such a great time with it. I've played about 20 times. 2021 games of Jaws Alliance since Christmas, and now that we're completely done, it makes us want to jump back into the main story and see where it goes, because we had such a great time with this. And the fact that we can transfer over the characters into regular Gloomhaven, so you can have four instead of six starting characters, I think it's amazing. And I still say Jaws the Lion is probably one of the best onboarding I've ever seen, and we'll talk about it a little bit later as well. But yeah, it's bittersweet because we finished Gloomhaven Jaws of the Lion, and I want to keep going. Now, we can go back and play like the scenarios that we haven't finished, but...
Yeah, but you can play it with the new character, or the other two characters you didn't use, right?
Well, that's one of the rules that we fudged, is that we went back and forth. Sometimes we would play four characters, sometimes we played two. Just, we wanted to see how everything worked. And so, some games we played with two characters, some games we played with four. So the updated is I should get Frosthaven from Thing, if it goes all to well, sometime between October and December of this year. It got pushed back. That's fine, because I still need to finish Gloomhaven. So,
well, how many scenarios are you into Gloomhaven?
If I'm we're honest. Only like 10 scenarios into that one, so.
Only 10. You know, yeah. you're more scenarios into Gloomhaven alone than I am both Jaws and Gloomhaven combined. just throw that out there. You know, you're twice as many in that base
than I am. Oh, yeah. No, there's 100, if I remember correctly, scenarios in Gloomhaven. Now, mind you, you're not going to see them all if you're doing the campaign. Some things close while other things open. But, yeah, we had a blast with it. And it's, like I said, it's bittersweet. But, man, did we have such a good time. And I mentioned it before in past podcasts. Just the memorable moments just from that game, like when we thought we were down, ended up winning. So good.
So what day was it that you finished it on?
What day?
Yeah, was it yesterday or 2 days ago?
Like Friday or so.
Friday. Okay, so then let me ask you.
Thursday.
I know you're like super reminiscent and bittersweet and all that stuff. How, like, really, how's the story compared to a lot of games? Like, it, because I imagine it's generic fantasy story and try and be, like, reasonable about it. Like,
in a sense, it was good. I enjoyed it. It was not a bad story. I don't want to get into spoilers. Sure. But the basic of this, if you played regular Gloomhaven, you're a new mercenary group. So you're interchanging, things are moving, there's moving parts in that. Whereas in this one, these are known, this is a known mercenary group. So that's why when you're playing it, you're only supposed to play that one character the whole way through. We interchanged it, but it was still the same characters as we went along.
Okay.
And so, yeah, we had a great time doing it. But yeah, it was a good story. I think from what I'm seeing in from Gloomhaven, from what I've seen in just the 10 scenarios, I like the story a little bit better there. But this one was pretty good. It actually told a good story because it was pretty much a concise story from the beginning on the onboarding part of it all the way through to the last scenario. So it wasn't like, oh, this happened and then all of a sudden something strange going on over here. It was pretty concise all the way through.
Okay. Very cool. Okay. Yeah, that's kind of what I thought it was. I was just curious to see if it held its own, you know, like, because I don't know, there's something about it that seemed like it was not going to be.
I think because you've only gone what into the third scenario,
in Jaws of the Lion. Yeah.
Yeah. So that whole onboarding, the first five scenarios, is setting up the main storyline. So on the very final scenario of that, the first five, that sets up for the rest of the game and what that campaign is going to be.
I see. Okay. Well, I didn't get the full experience. That's fair. Awesome. And the last game I'm going to talk about is a game that you probably never heard about. I finally got a chance to play it. I only bought it a week ago. It's called Cube, spelled C-I-U-B. Cube. I think it's like, I don't know if it's Norse or Celtic or how, I forget the exact pronunciation of it, but it's from Amigo Games and it's made by Tom Lehman, and there is about 50 something dice in it. They all have different colors and different abilities, but essentially you're playing Roll for It, but with the ability to upgrade your dice. If you're familiar with Roll for It, basically you're just trying to get combinations of different things. Like you might have a card that says you have to get like four ones. Well, you start with white dice, and those dice have the numbers 1 through 4 like normal. But then they have two sides that like give you the ability to upgrade dice or swap, as they call it. So you swap it for any other die that's available somewhere in the field. And some dice have like only the even numbers. Some dice have only odd numbers. Some dice have higher numbers. Some dice have abilities to swap or set other dice, but then they also have skulls, which kind of lock themselves out. There's a die with a number 7 on it, and some cards need the 7s for it. And so you're trying to just use like these little skills for it. And my son pointed something out to me is that there's little cauldrons underneath each of the sets of dice symbols. And, it's color coded to what color dice works well for you. And I didn't notice it because Daniel, you'll know why. Colorblind. You were colorblind. And so it wasn't until halfway through the game, my son pointed that out. And it was this aha moment. It was like, oh, that explains why those cauldrons look different. I thought they were just aesthetic, you know? No, like the red cauldron will use red dice, which are the higher numbers. So it was pretty neat. You could definitely tell it was a precursor to like, I came out after like roll for the galaxy and all that stuff. But I like where he was going with that, with like the different sections of dice that have like their own little abilities. He made like a gateway version of that. So it was pretty cool. There's a little bit of clunkiness in it, but overall it was a really fun game. And that was Cube by Amigo. It's actually really inexpensive because, well, Cube is just awesome like that. Amigo makes good quality stuff for fairly inexpensive.
Yeah, they do. I have to say, everything I've played from them has been pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah. They're no Game Right, but that's a pretty high bar to meet.
Mm-hmm.
But they're one of my next ones bound. If we're talking quality for the price, you know, they're up there for sure.
I have to say, if I'm going to talk about quality for the price, Prospero Hall is at the top of my list. Them and Game Right.
Quality for the price is Wotzel Poag, in my opinion. They're top of the line. Because, like, take the game Echidna Shuffle. Oh, my goodness. That has hardcore toy factor that you would see in Game Right. But that would be a $50 game from any other company. It's $30 from them. You know? Buccaneer Bones is a $10, like, super custom token dice game thing. Really good quality. So, I don't know. As far as bang for your buck, that's my vote. But then Game Right is probably right after that. And then Amigo is pretty
hey, there's an idea for a discussion topic, bang for your buck. Keep that on. Keep it on.
Write it down. Let's do this. I'm 100% in.
Give me a sec here. And while we're doing that, why don't you tell what we did with Board Game Revolution on Facebook?
Yes. So as always, we talk about our discussion topic on Board Game Revolution. We like to post every week a discussion topic or a question that we ask the audience. And we read out your answers as well as come up with some of our own. And we thought this was really interesting. We thought this year, since this is our 1 year anniversary for this podcast, what better than a 1 year reflective? Like, let's look over all the games we played in the past year, and let's talk about what were some of the best games you played. Because sure, anybody could say like what were their favorite games that they played this past year, but this is a little bit different because a lot of the games were virtual. A lot of them couldn't be enjoyed in the big groups. We didn't have our same like game nights at the comic shop. You know, we just couldn't do that because of the restrictions and the lockdowns. So we knew gamers are gamers and they're going to game no matter what. So what were your surprises that this year? And I had definitely some surprises. Some I kind of knew, but I'm flabbergasted with some of the games that I found this year and I can't wait to talk about them. But before we do, as a heads up, if you are following the Board Game Revolution group, you'll notice that if your answer doesn't get read immediately, that's because I delayed posting my post until I forgot about it today. And then I posted it thinking that Daniel had not. Only just for a moment later to be pointed out, oh, he had. So we have two different questionnaires, but they both got responses from our viewers. And so we'll bounce back and forth a little bit talking about it. So Daniel, do you want to go first?
Yeah, I'll go ahead and go first. So the question was basically, and he was mentioning it, and we specifically put it between March and March for people to understand. This is an anniversary thing for us.
Yeah.
And so the first one on my list, and by the way, I'm going to be reading two for your every one. That's what we agreed upon.
Yep.
And the first one on mine is Chuck, and he said The Red Cathedral. That's another one that you really enjoyed, wasn't it?
I did. Yeah, I thought Red Cathedral was phenomenal.
And Amanda said Dice Throne.
Representing. I couldn't agree more. Dice Throne was on my short list. It was up there for sure. Mike, he posted a few of his favorites. He's actually a moderator of the forum. He said, hands down, my faves and best are Dune Imperium, Fallout Shelter, and Underwater Cities, which that is your list right there.
Yeah, that pretty much is. Underwater Cities, I still have to play it a little bit more to see where it ranks in my listing here, but I really do enjoy playing it. Whereas on my side of the list here, Andres says Altiplano was a good surprise for him. And Roger says Eclipse Second Dawn for the Galaxy. I heard really good things about Eclipse. Haven't played it.
Very cool. Paul over on this side had some bad news. He said none since COVID shut down his gaming group. and you put like the weird little angry purple emoji devil thing. You know, yeah, and he's totally right. There was ways to play games online, but like some people just can't, you know, and it's not the same. It's really not.
It really isn't.
No.
My big thing too with the online, I prefer Board Game Arena because at least it's coded into it. I don't have to try to physically move pieces. Sometimes those physical physics generators just don't work very well.
Yeah. But although it has its disadvantage too, because a friend of mine, they got very upset at like a roll and write because they enjoy the tacticalness of the action scratch out paper. Like it was just very difficult for them to get past like trying to like when everything was, you and I played Boomerang and at the end of the round, it just marks everything off for you. And then that's it. And then that got them very distracted at trying to play and strategize in that game because they didn't actually write down like what was being marked off. So I get that. Yeah. And so like, I guess maybe the physics generator would have been better, but I mean, in a lot of roll and writes on like Tabletop Arena and Tabletopia, they use tokens and they just kind of put it on the board.
Yeah.
So I don't know if I'd want to do that personally.
Yeah. And so moving on to my side over here, Chris says Imperial spells in Steam. As well as Mikey says Gloomhaven. We finally made a commitment to blasting through on a bi-weekly basis, and it's been the most fun I've had board gaming in some time. I couldn't agree more.
Very good. And Imperial looks really good from level 99. I've been wanting to try that. Maybe this will be the year I buy it. I don't know. Maybe. We'll anyway, Matt says Sleeping Gods.
Yeah, I've heard really good things. I'm sad I didn't get on the Kickstarter on this one, but I'm hoping I can pre-order through like BGG or something here soon.
It's all right. You will one of these years.
Yeah, well, I just picked up Near and Far this year, so I can't really say anything.
Right.
Aaron, on my side, says Apocalypse Road, which is a GMT game that I've never heard of, but it looks like Mad Max.
Very cool.
Awesome. And this will make you a little jealous. The man himself, Kane Klinko, said his favorite game he played in the last year was My City.
Really? Okay. That now, so think about this for a minute. I'm a big fan of Kane Klinko. You already know that. Mm-hmm. I think he's a phenomenal designer. And I just picked up his Cosmic Factory game, and I'm really excited to play it. And that gets me thinking, if all of these games are interesting, the fact that My City was his favorite, like that's a really neat insight into his designs. Anyway.
You could also remember on our favorite game from our favorite designers, I think he mentioned a Reiner Knizia game then, too.
He said Raw. That's Raw. Right. So clearly he's a Raw fan. Raw, 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 Raw. And Knizia, too. Kadia, who is also an admin, said, tough one. I would have to say Dwellings of Eldervale, Trismegistus, and Anachrony.
Haven't played Dwellings. Haven't played Trismegistus, whatever that is. It's one of the T-Series games.
Yep.
And Anachrony, though, that's a good game.
I am still jealous that you've played. Maybe I'll buy that this year. Now that's on my list all of a sudden. I don't know. Imperial, Anachrony.
All right. So the next one over here is by Linda. And she said Spirit Island. And Jeff follows that up with Food Chain Magnet. Both games I have not played.
Yeah, Food Chain Magnet, yeah.
Food Chain Magnet looks like a chore.
It looks, I hate the graphic design on it. Like, you have to admit, like, that makes my games look, like, the board. The cards are
The cards are beautiful. The components itself are okay. The board, it looks so bland.
Yeah, they could have just done, like, if they made like fake grass and green, already like a million times better, right?
Yeah.
Oh well. All right. Molly on this side says, strange since it's been a year since any face-to-face games. Favorite is Tainted Grail. It's been a great game story experience. Special mention for Clans of Caledonia, discovered on Board Game Arena. I absolutely love it. Finally won my first game of it last week. Good job, Molly. Yeah, Clans of Caledonia looks really fun.
Yeah, it looks good. I haven't played it myself. Over here, John says, Star Wars Outer Rim, and I can't complain. That's one of my favorite games. It did not make my list because I only played it once within the year and once before the year started, so I've only played it twice, but I do like it. Jolene says, Betrayal at the House on the Hill. So there's a classic right there.
2004 coming up. Still standing strong 17 years later. Absolutely. Yeah. Our friend Adam from our game nights, he says Battlecon is in particular a very solid as a fierce two-player title. And I also found Legends Untold to really punch above its weight for a relatively small box. I've also enjoyed playing Disney Villainous with my sister, and I'm always eager to play the Star Wars LCG with people. Very cool.
Nice.
Good picks. I completely agree with Villainous. And Battlecon, oh man. Have you played Battlecon yet?
No, I have not. Is it like the predecessor to the Exceed system almost?
Yeah. Yes, it is.
I have played Exceed. I haven't played the Battlecon.
Oh, Battlecon's so much better. I get why they're both very solid. I learned to play Battlecon, and it is so solid of a design. Yeah. Brad hit down the
How many more do you have on your list?
I have three more.
Because I have three more. I wonder if I missed something here. Doesn't look like it.
No.
Alrighty.
Alright.
So my next one over here is from Andy, and he says either Lorenzo El Magnifico or It's a Wonderful World. Although I know this may be controversial, but it could also be Black Angel.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that.
Well, and Dom, not our friend Dom, but a different one, said Cthulhu, Death May Die.
Cthulhu, Death May Die. Cool. Michael over here said Dune Imperium is fantastic.
And finally, for my last one, Mark says Anachrony.
It's interesting. Like, we didn't plan this, but I feel like a lot more Euro gamers came to my side, didn't they?
Sounds like it.
Because, so I'm going to give a shout out here real quick. I know you got a good designer on your side and all, but so did I. Sean Epperson, good friend of mine, Thing 12 Games, go buy all their stuff. Every game that they've ever made, they're all good quality. Sean Epperson said, Paris is outstanding. And now I wonder which Paris he's talking about, the De Vere two-player game or the newer game that just came out. I'll ask him. After the Empire is incredible, and Trois Dice is one of the best roll and writes around. I just got Trois Dice, and I am excited to try it. It's over here on my shelf somewhere. I hope I didn't lose it already. Well, that was fast. I had no idea where it is. Somewhere on the shelf, though. On my shelf of shame. I'm running out of room now.
It's probably gonna pretty soon be the floor of shame.
The floor of shame, yeah. No, it's branching off to the second shelf of shame. Shelf of shamer. Oh, there it is. There's Twad Ice. Okay. And then the last one I got that just snuck in here, Neil said, Holy the Festival of Colors. By far the best game I've played in a long while. It's beautiful, intriguing, and strategic. Absolutely love it. And then Katia said I loved it too, and yeah, and they all agreed. So I've been wanting to try Holly too. I mean,
I've heard really good things about it. So, but yeah, because of the colors, it makes me a little iffy because, you know, issues.
Sure, I get you on that. I mean, like, Floodgate Games makes absolutely some of the most stunningly beautiful games.
They do.
They really do. Even like their tiny little card game, like Dome Crushers or something like that. Phenomenal game. Yeah, and it's just like a micro game with cards, and it's still really decent art and a fun game, so I do want to try it. All right, cool. So Daniel, let's talk about our games. I mean, we had quite the year.
Yeah, we did. I actually got quite a few games on here that I've really enjoyed, and like I said, my top three, I'm not going to lie, you've probably heard about me talk about them a lot in the past year. Mm-hmm. Probably my top four.
Probably your top four, yeah. So we're going to be repeating that a lot. Do you want to go first, or do you want me to flip the coin?
Coin of Doom.
Coin of Doom it is. All right, so yeah, I will be starting. I had to think about that. Because you always pick Tails.
Tails never fails.
Yep. So couple very, very quick shout outs to Pandemic Legacy Season 1, which I already talked about, and Dice Throne. Those are both on my short list. But I'm going to go from the most recent to the 1 year ago that I started playing games. So they're not technically in a particular order, but I just want to talk about which ones I got in what order. The most recent one that I really just absolutely adore now, Castles of Tuscany. Mm. It is, I went over to spend some time with my mom the other day, and we have a family friend who hangs out with her quite a bit. And when she was rooming my brother in Arizona a number of years ago, I visited my brother and her as well, and I taught them how to play Castles of Burgundy. And they were not gamers, so that was definitely a curve. Her and her husband were kind enough to try it out, see what they would do. And ever since, they've been absolutely addicted to that game. And they love Castles of Burgundy. She had not heard of Castles of Tuscany. And so I got the opportunity yesterday to tell her that it exists and that it's like a sequel that plays in 45 minutes. And nice. She was like, oh my God. And just absolute flabbergasted. Super excited to try it. And so, yeah, everybody who I've shown it to, like, they adore it. Daniel, I gotta get you to play it, man.
Well, I'm more than likely going to pick up my own copy. I just haven't pulled the trigger yet, because right now is, for some reason, the age of Kickstarter with everything that's going on. So
I've been very good about not looking. Like, so here's the thing. Here's my problem with Kickstarter right now and why it's so good. I just started backing Button Shy Games as a Patreon thing. I just got my very first reward offer. Haven't even gotten my first game of the month yet, but I am a member. And then coming out of nowhere, they were like, well, now we have a Kickstarter for our most recent game, and you get a discount if you're a member, and you can also get an intro pack that gives you like a few other games too. Like Sprawlopolis and the Tussie Mussie. And so now I'm throwing so much money for just little packets of cards. It's absurd. Like, I feel like I'm playing Magic the Gathering again. It's like
Tussie Mussie, that's the Elizabeth Hargrave game, no?
It is the Elizabeth Hargrave game. It's an I split you choose with two cards. And she does it. It's brilliant because you take...
I've heard really good things about it, so...
Yeah, you take both cards and you put one face down and then let the other player choose. Like, that's brilliant. That's a super smart design. And that's what it is.
I have to say, I really like that one. I like that idea.
It's smart, you know, and so I'll have to show you. I'll have to show you pretty soon. But yeah, so I got such a problem with Kickstarter.
Don't even get me started. I'm in some big ones right now. I'm in the Everdell. I'm in the Stellaris that I was telling you about last time. Yeah. Then I really liked Marvel United. I didn't think I was going to. Then I played it. It was actually on my short list. And I'm like, this is
Marvel
cool.
Marvel United or Marvel?
Yeah, it's the... Marvel United. It's the come on game. It's the one with the little chibis.
I prefer that one over Marvel Champions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I really enjoyed it. I liked it. I'm like, okay, that's not bad. And then come on just comes out and announces that they're going to be doing that with X-Men, which are my favorite Marvel stuff. So I was like, oh God, come on. And then
please
I got,
tell me they're going to have Dupe in there. They got to have Dupe.
I don't know. They haven't even talked about it yet, but then I also got the expansion for Lockup coming up. It's just like, why? Why this time? You're preventing me from getting other good games because I really want this stuff because I really like this stuff.
Yeah.
And again, you have Castles of Tuscany, so I don't have to pull the trigger right away.
No. I will bring it over and then you'll buy it immediately. We'll have to like drive to El Paso and you'll buy it in the store. Like, just like,
yeah,
you know,
In my defense, I'm almost fully vaccinated. I got a couple more weeks before I can get my second shot, but that's a possibility.
That's true. Yeah. Yeah. When it's safe for both of us to do so, and, mm-hmm. and we won't at all in any way spread it. Yep. Agreed.
All right. So my first game on my list, since we got a little bit of sidetrack there that I played within the last year, my favorite one, is the only one on here that I think that I've played once and once only. and that is Twilight Imperium 4th Edition. And this specifically had to make my list because I was so impressed and enamored by it when I played it. It's really fun, first off. And yes, it's a long game, and you're so invested in playing it, though, you don't realize it's been that long. My first and only game of it so far was 5 hours, and it was a 3-player game. Really, really enjoyed it. It's very well produced for Fantasy Flight game with a lot of plastic in it. Bit lucky because of the dice rolling and stuff like that, but I love the action selection that you're doing because you're drawing these things and, okay, I'm going to do this, and you have a possibility of following someone else. They get that as well. You just get the main purpose of it, and they can do something with it as well. I loved all that. I love the trying to go to Mechatol Rex and trying to fight each other, trying to build up your military and doing it properly, or hanging out in your little corner and build up, make sure nobody comes after you. It's a really good game. So much so that after I played it, I went out and bought my own copy. So
you did.
Do need to get it to the table again. I really, really enjoy it. I want to get the expansion because it looks good, but the expansion is so pricey too. The expansion is the same price as some massive board games. It's $80 on its own. But Twilight Imperium 4th Edition is my 8th favorite game I played last year. Within the last year.
The next one I'm going to talk about is one that you actually brought up earlier, and it was referenced by one of the players in our post as well, and that is Red Cathedral. Oh boy. Oh man, is that a good game. I am absolutely enamored with it. It has no right being as fun as it was. It really doesn't. I don't know what I can say about it more. If you've heard me talk about it before, I haven't talked about it much, but when I did, it's a meaty, crunchy Euro in a box only about the size of a Munchkin box. So many components, such a good quality. De Vere is, in my opinion, they're knocking it out of the park right now. They're one of those publishers to keep an eye out for. I'm almost 100%. If I hear about a De Vere game that looks good, I'm probably in. And Red Cathedral, it didn't disappoint. It had everything good about it. It was so cool. I like it a lot. I'm not going to yammer too much more about it. Red Cathedral, go try it if you like meaty Euros.
Awesome. So my number 7 game, I've talked about it before. In fact, it was part of our debate last week and was in line to possibly be in our championship edition of Top 8 Debate later tonight. And that was The Crew, Quest for Planet 9. What haven't I said about this game that I could just not be redundant? I love this game. It took one of my favorite mechanisms, trick-taking. I've had such a blast with trick-taking games. And it spun it on its head by making it a co-op. And then you have to be quiet about what's in your hand, of course, like most trick-taking games. But then you could also be like, hey, this is the only card in my hand of this nature. So if we're going to feed him, we need to get this to me early. This way we can lead to him over there. I loved all that. I love the way it communicates in the game. I like the way you got to force tricks in the game. I'm not going to go too much onto this because I've talked about it a lot. We debated it last week. It ended up winning Cosmo Games. So The Crew, Quest for Planet 9, amazing.
Cool. My next one was the only game that I had played prior to this year, technically, but I finally got my own copy, and I hadn't played it for probably about 4 or 5 years at least at that point, and that is Expedition Northwest Passage. For a long time, I've been craving to get this game. Finally had the means to do it for fairly inexpensive, because now that it's out of print, it wasn't a cheap game at first, and it's one that stayed its value. And it's absolutely fantastic. It hits on my heartstrings because of how much I love Carcassonne, because you're tiling, but then you're path building, you're trying to move two different pieces, one that the sleds that move on ice and boats that move on water, while the board fluctuates as to where which or different parts of it are frozen or not. Oh my god, it's absolutely brilliant. It's so neat how it works. And it's one of those ones that I'm gonna have to show you pretty soon, Daniel.
Sounds good. I'd like to try it. I've heard good things about it, just haven't played it.
I think you've only heard about it from me. I have not heard of anybody else talk about it.
I've heard it mentioned by some of the people in the Dice Tower.
Really?
Yeah. I don't know if it was actual the Dice Tower people or like the other contributors that they brought in.
Sure.
But I've heard about it before.
Oh, that's awesome. That is
so. My next game on the list, you've actually played. I think I showed it to my wife. I showed it to you and our mutual friend Dom. And I love it. It's Western Legends. Mm-hmm. It gives me that sandbox feel that you would get in like major video games like Skyrim and stuff like that. So you could do what you want to get your points. You don't necessarily have to do what Dom's doing or what you're doing. I could do whatever I want. Excuse me. I can play poker. Have fun doing that. I can go gold mining and risk my luck and hopefully get some gold, get some money out there, get my legendary points however I want. I could be wanted and be a cattle rustler, or I can be a sheriff and get my points going after said person who's wanted. So it's such a good game. I wish there was a better solo aspect because there is one on BGG, but I didn't really enjoy it. And it's not like an official one. It's a print and play that you can get online. And some of those tend to be pretty good. This one wasn't. I don't like this game at two players, though. I don't like the Man in Black system in that game. But playing it multiplayer, I really enjoy it. It's a fun game. It gives me that Western feel. I'm a sucker for Westerns, whether it's video games or movies or board games. So, yeah, this is hitting all those spots for me. And I really need to try the expansion. I have Ante up, as you can see behind me. And I need to get, I have the new one coming in whenever the Kickstarter starts coming in, Blood Money. So I'm looking forward to getting more games of this to the table.
Yeah, good choice. Yeah, I liked Western Legends a lot. It was really good. I can't knock it. It was just really solid.
It's a solid game.
Yeah. My next one is, I think the only worker placement on this list, which is rare because I normally like worker placements, but this is also a worker placement where you roll the meeples. It is Quetzal. Do you remember me telling you about this?
Oh, yes. Yes. I've heard about this one. Yeah.
In Jigamik. Yes. Yeah. If you roll some meeples, which depending on which side they land on, that decides what kind of workers they are, either adventurers or archaeologists. And they go to different spots for different reasons. There's ways to re-roll them. There's ways to manipulate it. And if they stand upright or on their side, they count as either or. I love that. That's so super cool. And it's a solid worker placement on top of it with set collection. It's really neat. It does something completely new. And at first you think, oh, well, you're rolling meeple. That's a super gimmick. Yeah, it is. But it works really well. It's surprisingly well because of how less likely it'll land on its side. Now, sometimes they will, because it does happen. And you have like a main dude who either side counts as as either side. So both sides are your archaeologists and your adventurers. So it doesn't matter. It's super neat. I like it a lot. It's a brilliant game. Go check it out. If you want to try it, but without paying for it yet, go to Board Game Arena and you can try Quetzal.
Nice. So speaking of worker placement, we're on number 5, correct? Just making sure.
That was my number 4. So I talked about Castles of Tuscany, Red Cathedral, Expedition, and Quetzal.
So that was your 4th one that you've talked about.
Yep.
All right. Just making sure because I wanted to make sure I was at the right spot. So the next game on my list here, speaking of worker placements, it's going to be my number 5. Yeah.
Yeah.
Speaking of worker placements, can you guess which worker placement I'm going to talk about here?
Yes, I can. I'm going to answer So Very Wrong About Games question real quick. Did I play the physical version or if I only played on Board Game Arena? I've only played on Board Game Arena, but I have played games where you're rolling meeples, and I was working on one and designing one for a while. So I know that the rolling meeples does actually work, unless it, for some reason, has a printing error and the meeples messed up. But I'm sure Jigamik would replace it. All right, your worker placement. Oh, would it be? I think we played Underwater Cities before the lockdown.
Yeah, this is. It was also mentioned in one of the. In fact, it was on yours that mentioned it, and you even made the comment that it would be on my list. This is my list to play.
Why you gotta make me sound stupid like this?
Where is it?
Let's pull up my list so that way I won't be. I mean, I'm not pulling up my list. I don't know what you thought. Oh, I just remembered by using my brain. I bet it's Anachrony.
Nope.
Okay, let me go back into my
memory. Look at where I'm pointing.
At your face?
No, it's behind me.
Well, if it's behind you, I can't see through your head. No, I know. It's Eldervale, right? Or Everdell. Oh, Fallout Shelter? Really?
Yeah. Okay. I actually got it this the past year, and I really, really enjoyed it. One, I love the theme of the game. I'm a big fan of the Fallout. I enjoyed Fallout the board game. I like Fallout Shelter a little bit better, especially because it's worker placement. That's what I like. That's what I enjoy. But it's such an easy worker placement. It's easy to teach. It's easy to learn. It can be a little long depending on how many players you have, and especially because the way the threats are coming out and the dice and stuff like that. But such a good game. It's really well produced for, and it's small. It fits basically in a lunchbox. That's my only argument, is because it comes in a tin shaped like a lunchbox. At least give me the lunchbox handle if you're going to do that and make it where it's latched and comes out like a lunchbox. But other than that, I think it's a really good game. It's a really simple game. It's a really enjoyable game. And I love playing this. And it's a simple game to bust out when my wife was like, hey, let's play a game. I can bring it out and play it. And it's real quick and she's happy. She enjoys it too. There's a little luck involved when it comes to the combat with the creatures in the rooms and stuff like that, because it's dice rolling. But honestly, it feels thematic for what it is. Because you are a little bit lucky when you're fighting some of these creatures because they're really tough. So I enjoy it. Yes. And the reason why it beat out Anachrony is, one, I played it more. I like the simplicity of it. And I've only played Anachrony once. I need to play it again to really, really understand if I truly like that game, because there's some issues and some learning stuff that I had with Anachrony.
Very cool. All right. Good choice. Yeah. No, I, for being a Fallout game, I enjoyed it. That's saying something, because I've liked every Fallout game I've played so far.
Yeah.
Actually, Fallout video games, I've never played them.
See, the video games is what draw me to the board games, the Fallout board game. That was good. I still like Fallout Shelter more than Fallout the board game.
That's fair. I don't blame you. I can definitely see that for you. The next one on my list, I had a little goal this year to buy every one of the Spiel des Jahres games that I have not completed, or that I hadn't bought yet. And now I have the lovely full collection of all 41 Spiel des Jahres winners. And there was one that really stood out to me this year that you and I played, and we played with our group. And
Turns into Taxis.
Yeah, Turn into Taxis.
This was on my short list.
Yes. I mean, right? It is a solid game. I am just upset that they don't really make an English version of it.
Yeah.
Because they need to.
No, like, it's such a good game.
It needs to be reprinted, rethemed. Maybe rethemed. I don't know. It probably doesn't. Just, you know, make the art a little cleaner, you know, easier for colorblind folks like us. But other than that, I mean, it's a brilliant game. It's really underrated. Not enough people have played it. And in fact, I think when we did our Spiel des Jahres debate, a lot of people voted for that one. And I think it was up there as far as one of the lesser known ones that got a lot of votes. So, like, obviously, you have the Ticket to Ride and the Azul and all those ones. But yeah, Turn and Taxis, it is absolutely just one of the smartest route building games. I totally get why it won in 2006. It deserved every bit of it. So Turn and Taxis, if you can find a copy, definitely get it.
Yeah, no, I at least try to play it if you get a possibility to do so. It's really good. I really enjoyed it. I can see why it won the Spiel. This is also when it won the Spiel is when the Spiel games tended to be heavier. And that was before the Kenner Spiel came into existence, because lately, the Spiel winners have been a lot lighter fare than compared to the Kinderspiel winners.
Well, I mean, around that time, I wouldn't say right around that time, because it was 2006 that it won. Ticket to Ride was 2004. Mm-hmm. 2005 was Via Paletti, I believe. And 2007, if I'm not mistaken, was like Dixit, I think. So, like, they were already on the decline as far as heavy goes.
Yeah.
But I mean, that's compared to like El Grande and like the mid-90s, like Catan and El Grande.
No, I get you that. I'm just talking because like the crew, even though it's simpler, it's really heady and won the Kinderspiel instead of the Spiel. Speaking of Spiel, I do have one on my list, but we'll get to that in a minute. But first, my number four game is one I've played just recently. It's one of the more recent ones since around about the new year. It's one that you've turned me on to, and I've been playing the mess out of it. There's three games in this series. It's a Phil Walker Harding game.
The adventure game.
Adventure card games. Specifically, I put Monochrome Ink because that's my favorite out of them. Mm-hmm. I haven't finished Volcano yet. I have a little bit of issues with some of the stuff that's happened in Volcano, but I can't give you an overall how I feel about it yet because I'm only halfway through. But I really enjoy them for small box games, giving you a very good story as you're progressing through. You got some interesting choices as you're going on. I'm looking forward to the fourth one. Even if I don't like the finish of the way the third one ends, I really want to try that fourth one. It's like an abandoned hotel or something like that. I really enjoy these games. I dig it. They give you that point-and-click adventure feel that you used to play in those old-school computer games back in the late 90s, early 2000s. I'm showing my age, but what can I say? I really enjoyed those back in the day. And the way I didn't even realize that they can translate so well to board gaming that I've dug 2.5 of what I've played of these so far. So yeah, adventure card game, Monochrome Ink.
Cool. Very cool. Good choice. My next one is the only technically the only cooperative game I have on my list. It'll make more sense later. But this is the only cooperative one. Daniel, do you think you can guess this one?
The only cooperative game on your list? Mm-hmm. Well, it's further back, so it's not Legacy Season Zero, because right. You said you're doing it in the timeline.
Well, October would have had, that's when Pandemic Legacy Season Zero came out, but I said that was an honorable mention, so it's not that.
Yeah.
This is a much smaller game in comparison.
And it's a co-op.
That's co-op.
So it's not going to be Jaws of the Lion because you said it's a much smaller game in comparison. Well,
now, there is another big game that it's based off of.
Oh, hold on.
Ooh, yes.
It's another big game that it's based off. Is it it's a pandemic, isn't it? It's the Hot Zone? No.
It's not. Although that was a good one. It's not that.
Then I'm not sure because you said if it's a small co-op based off another big co-op. That says a lot of stuff.
Yep. And the last clue I'll give you is Tank Cosmos. Cosmos specifically.
Oh, it's the Legends of Andor one, Rightburg.
Yep, Liberation of Rightburg. Yes. Oh my god, it's so good. It's so good. I already kind of knew I was gonna like it. It's a very different game than Legends of Andor, which I do already like, but this is just a whole new level. There's something so brilliant about how you're managing what you're doing, the actions you're playing on your turn, like getting more cards, and like a mini deck builder thing by defeating certain monsters. Such a brilliant game. I can't tell you how cool it is, and it's like nail biting the entire time. Liberation of Riper.
That is a good one.
Great game.
I mean, it was on my my list over here of games played, but I just can't believe that skipped my mind. That was a good one. I really did enjoy it. It wasn't going to make my list because, again, I only played it the one time. A lot of the games, if you notice, the more I've talked about because I've played them more, these ones made more impact because I did play them more. Mm-hmm. And that one, my next on my list, is the one I was talking about, the Spiel des Jahres winner. Can you guess what just this one is?
Yeah, that's tricky. Not a Kenner Spiel, right?
No, it's a Spiel winner.
And it wasn't Turning Taxis because you said that was on your short list.
Mm-hmm.
Just One?
Just One. And the top three games here are going to make an impact, or the reason my top three, because of what they've done for this year. These are my most played games. And a lot of it has to do with the fact that we had to do a lot of social distancing gaming, whether it was on Board Game Arena or through Zoom calls. And Just One really lends itself to social distancing gaming with the Zoom calls and stuff like that. Because all you need is either a piece of paper and a pencil, pen, whatever. Or if you have a whiteboard and dry erase markers, you can use it and hold it up and stuff like that. Someone just has to turn away from the camera, let everybody do what they got to do, which you pretty much have to do if you're playing Just One in person too. Someone would have to kind of turn away while everybody's discussing, or not discussing, but showing each other their answers.
While everyone is disgusting.
So It's like probably jumped up there into my top 10 of games of all time, just because what it helped alleviate that stress of lockdown, because I was still able to connect and play board games with friends, even at a distance. And so, yeah, it's been one of my most played games of 2020. I really want the expansion to come out here in America in English. This way we can play with more cards. This way it doesn't get a little too samey. It can, because sometimes you're seeing a lot of the same cards over and over, even though they have five different answers on each one. Mm-hmm. But yeah, no, I have to say Just One was a phenomenal game, and I understand why it won the Spiel.
Very cool. Awesome. My second to last one is one of the oldest ones. When the lockdowns happened, I was very determined that I was still going to play games. And so I actually ended up buying this one along with a couple others that are along the same universe. And Daniel, what's my favorite solo game? Do you know?
Onira.
Of course. So I put Nautilion on my list, which is one of the ones I got after.
That's the one with the dice and the kites, right?
You're thinking Arion. Okay. But Nautilion does use dice, though. And it's a very simple thing. It has 3d6 dice, and you have the bad guy on one side, your dude on the other side, a whole string of tokens on there that are numbered from 1 to 9, and then then you have a card. And so you roll the dice, and you choose one for the bad guy, one for the good guy, and one for the card. If the card is a 5 or a 6, or I'm sorry, a really low number, like a 1 or a 2, which would be kind of like saving it, or kind of like making the game longer, you get a penalty for putting it on the card. Everything else is fine. But then the numbers that you roll for each of the two, that's how many you move them. And you're trying to get yours on certain spaces to get the right tokens. But anything that the bad guy lands on, he removes that token from the game. So you have to plan it right. Like, once you pass each other, then if he gets to the end before you do, you lose no matter what. So you don't want to pump him full of a bunch of quick numbers after he passes you, because then he'll get to the end long before you. But then before it, if you give him a bunch of quick numbers, he'll get to the end that much sooner, but fewer tokens he removes from the game. So much great choice in this game. It's so brilliant. I can't tell you enough. It's so good. If there was an app version of this, I would probably really play it way too much. But I just love that. Roll 3 dice, distribute them accordingly.
Yeah, I can't disagree with that, because I play Onirum a lot when I'm just sitting there doing something on my phone or just hanging out, can't watch TV or something. Yeah. Had to go to the DMV one point. I was playing a lot of Onirum.
Oh, yeah.
And that was before lockdown, but yeah.
Have you done the expansions in Onirum yet?
I've done one. I can't remember which one it was, but I think it was like the first one, because you integrate them slowly.
Yeah, that's the best one, honestly. But yeah, that's my second to last one, Nautilion.
All right. Speaking of my second to last one, another one of my most played games within the last year. Another one that lends itself over to video calls. Can you guess which one this one is?
Not Codenames. It's Rollin' Right. So Welcome To?
No, but you're in the right area.
Oh, no, you're Flippin' Right one. Oh, no. Yeah, it's Cartographers.
Cartographers, a role player tale. Yep. Another game I've talked about a lot within the last year. And again, sorry for that. But there was a reason why this got talked a lot. This got played a lot. Like, same with Just One. Most of 2020, especially during the summer, we were locked down. And I could still play this with friends over video chat and had a good time with it. I have to look up my stats, but I don't even know how much I played this over the last year. This and Just One were just right up there. We play them almost every 2 weeks, every week, whenever we got them. Video call with some friends of ours. So good. I really like it. I highly recommend it. If you haven't tried it, pick it up if you can. And if you're going to do it, use color pencils, shade in your areas. It's very cathartic. It's very pleasing, especially when you're really stressed out about what's going on. You needed to play a game. The coloring aspect of it, because it's polynomials, you're placing it in there and trying to build your map as best, better than everybody else. It's very cathartic and it's very good. I enjoy it. Again, really well done over Zoom, because here's the thing. Yes, you need the papers and you could hand them off to friends if they live nearby. But because of lockdown, they actually put them on BGG for you to print out files to get them downloaded for you can play with friends over online. And I think that's just such a smart thing to do. And I really love it. I'm looking forward to the stuff that should be coming in later this year with the extra map packs, the heroes, where you can start fighting off the monsters. So looking forward to it.
Very cool. All right. And my last one, which is the oldest one on my list, which is why it's them. Obviously, since I bought Nautilion, I was in kind of a solo gaming kick. Daniel, do you... I know I've constantly encouraged you and the whole group to try this game.
I knew this was going to be on your list. I just didn't know where it was going to be. That Bathysphere game.
Bargain Basement Bathysphere. Good Lord, is this game fun. Like, I can't wait for them to eventually make a real print version of it. It deserves it, honestly. It is such a great game. Like, even printed in a small little notebook, that would be brilliant. It would be an amazingly fun time. Bargain Basement Bathysphere is a print and play solo roll and write game. All you need is a pencil, and you need to have up to 8 dice, I think, is D6s. That's it. Print out the pages, play it through. I've played through about half of the game so far. It's been a long time since I played it last, and I think I'm about to fix that pretty soon. I've been craving on it. The storyline is hilarious. It doesn't make much sense, but it's absolutely like comedic. It's like Hitchhiker's Guide kind of comedy. It's really just absurdist, very random, but genuinely humorous storyline. It's cool. Basically, you build a bargain basement bathysphere, as it's called, which is basically the ball that goes underwater, and you have to go down kind of as far as you can to get certain things, and then back up. And the way you do it is by rolling like 3 to 8 dice, depending on how many you go. And that number of dice, you then decide in what order do you go down. So if I roll a 3, a 5, and a 1, I can do like the 5 first, go down 5 spaces, land on that spot, then go down 1 more, and then 3 more from there. And so you're kind of planning out your turn of which is the best path to make it while landing on all the opportune moments without skipping past all the bad stuff. It's so cool. It's super fun. And technically it's Legacy now because you play across a campaign. And so it's super cool. And there's all sorts of weird stuff that I'm not going to spoil, but it's print out the first 2 pages. That's all you got to do. Try it. And then when you realize that, do the first chapter. And then when you're hooked, then just finally admit it to yourself and print out the whole thing like I did.
Yeah. I don't know if I want to do that because ink is expensive.
It is. You can get it printed elsewhere. It's all black and white though. They have a black and white and a color version, I believe.
Still expensive.
Yeah, I'm not saying it's not.
My black and white ink costs just as much as my colored ink, so.
Yeah, but it won't take a full cartridge. I confirmed that when I printed them all. And even then, a full cartridge is about the same as a good, like, solid roll and write game, you know, like one of the kind of bigger ones. Yeah, it's about right. Bargain Basement Bathysphere. Yeah, phenomenal game.
All right, if you have paid any attention to me whatsoever as we've gone through this year, at least since the summer, you know what my number one is.
Gloomhaven.
Jaws of the Lion. Yep. We started at the top of the thing when I talked about Bittersweet. We finished it. And the thing is, I played this in June, July, whenever it came out. I was soloing it and having a decent time. And then my wife's like, well, I kind of want to play Gloomhaven. I'm like, well, I got this over here. You want to try this? She's like, yeah. So I had to reset everything, started playing it again, and it just took off. And it was right after Christmas. Like right the day after Christmas, I went from December 26th till this week, Thursday, I think it was, played the entirety of this thing. So what, 3 months, got it all done. And this is not saying that we took our time with it. We played 2 or 3 scenarios every time we played, except for this last one, because it only took us 1 scenario to beat it. And then we were like, oh, that was it? I wanted to play more. Not that we were disappointed. It's actually a satisfying conclusion. We weren't sure if we were going to win because the way it was all set up. But, oh, man, it's bittersweet that it's done. Really, really enjoyed it. It's well-produced and easiest. I would have to say the easiest way to be taught how to play a big game like this. You've mentioned it with Pandemic Legacy, where it says, hey, just play Pandemic a couple times till you get comfortable with the mechanisms before you start going into the legacy version of it. And then they even tell you that in the regular Pandemic Legacy, the first one is like, hey, play this a couple times or at least once until you're familiar with the mechanism. This one's like, this is what we're going to do. We're going to give you five scenarios. We're going to teach you how to play the entire game. Don't worry about everything in the beginning. First game, just learn how to play your cards, how to move, how to do this, how to do the attack. Don't even worry how the monster moves. This is all they're doing this time around. And then two, they introduce how the monsters do stuff. And then three, and then four, and then five. And it's a little bit of a spoiler here, but it's also the onboarding. Five teaches you how to play against bosses in this game. And so I think that's something very critical because it's very difficult to play bosses when you're in the original Gloomhaven, because you're just like, oh my God, what's going on? And they're so powerful and stuff like that. So it just kind of teaches you and guides you. And then there's like, all right, gloves are off, have fun. And I think it's the best way to teach a game like this, to the point, if anybody wants to get into Gloomhaven, which is my favorite game of all time, it's a 10 out of 10 for me. I recommend starting with Jaws of the Lion before you even touch regular Gloomhaven. I know Isaac Childress says, I'd prefer you guys play regular Gloomhaven and then move to this. No, this is where you should start. One, it's a prequel. And two, there's some rule changes that they made that fix some stuff like the line of sight and stuff like that that are different in this one. I recommend once you're done playing this, carry those over into Gloomhaven. Move those rules because he says you can. And it's the best way to play it because it makes a little bit more simpler, makes more sense. Okay, this is where they want to go based on the initiative as well. If there's a tie, this is how you do things. It's phenomenal. It's my favorite game of the last year. Again, 10 out of 10. Played this in 3 months, and it made that big of an impression on us. Mind you, I already was going in that I was going to like it because I'm a huge fan of Gloomhaven itself. This blew me away how simplified it was to get players started. And it's saying, take these rules and swap them over. So Gloomhaven, Jaws of the Lion is my number one.
And there you have it. Those are the best games that we've experienced over the past year, as well as our viewers. They are phenomenal choices. Any of them are within top 10 category easily.
Oh,
and
yeah.
We highly encourage anybody who has heard this podcast, that sounds even slightest bit interesting, it's probably a million times more than you even think it is. So, go try it. Do you have anything else to say before we sign off, Daniel?
No, just for our audience here on Twitch, please stay tuned. We're going to be doing the Top 8 Debate Champions Edition coming up soon. For those at home, all video re-uploads and audio uploads are going to be Mondays for Chits and Giggles, Wednesdays for Top 8 Debates, both at 12 Eastern.
And if you ever want to watch us live, you can join us at twitch.tv/everydayboardgames.
All video re-uploads can be found on YouTube at Everyday Board Games 2020. And if you like what you find, please give us a subscribe and a like on the video. And all audio versions are found on most podcast platforms under Everyday Board Games Podcast, which includes Spotify, Google, Amazon Music, and Podbean.
No, we're not even mentioning iTunes anymore. And if you ever want to contact us directly, you can email us at everydayboardgames2020@gmail.com.
You can also get in contact with us on our official Twitter page at EBG Podcast.
So before we sign off and before we say thank you, as always, I want to say a sincere thank you to all of our listeners over the past year and anybody who's joined us in this podcast. Here's to many more. As always, I've been Daniel.
And I've been Daniel. And I want to also thank you for joining us.
And we want to thank you for tuning in to, let's do this in unison. Ready, Daniel?
Everyday board games.
Well, we
tried. You didn't do a countdown.
Why would we do a countdown? Unison is at the same time.
I know, but we have to get synced onto unison.
No, we don't. That's the...
We're not married.
At this point, we argue like we are. So... thank you for tuning in. It's been Everyday Board Games. Have a great night.
Have a good one.